Bom dia, boa tarde. Welcome to another episode of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. I'm your guest host, John Neves, back here again to talk about my favorite subject, your favorite subject, and then, of course, Portuguese soccer, Portuguese football, whatever word you use in your part of the world. Episode 197. Let me just start off quickly by saying that a year ago at this time, of when I'm dropping this episode at this time in November, we were getting ready for the World Cup. And my, does a year fly by so fast? It really has. But it was at this time last year that we were all fresh with excitement, confidence in our teams, well, at least some of us, and getting ready to watch basically the greatest international spectacle when it comes to football or soccer. And as a result, it was just, that was last year. Well, a year later, fast forward, the schedule is pretty much normal across Europe and domestic competitions. And we're back to, I think, especially since the COVID times, I think the schedule is more normal than it's ever been in terms of what we are used to. But that was a year ago today. Lots to talk about here in episode 197. First off, what happened with Portugal against Liechtenstein? What an awful first half. Don't really understand the call-ups by Roberto Martinez. I'll tell you why in a minute. But at the end of the day, we did beat Liechtenstein. 9 wins out of 9 in group play, and that's something to be very, very happy about. Give you my thoughts on what's going on at Porto. What is going on at Porto with all that controversy? I will tell you what happened, kind of give you both points of view, and kind of tell you what this means for Porto's future. We also will give you a few thoughts about the derby, an incredible finish. Yet another match with more goals in stoppage time. Unbelievable. It seems like that's been one of the big storylines this season, is how many goals have been scored in stoppage time. Then we'll do my second division report, women's football report, Liga report. Talk a little bit about the Big Four, and then I will wrap this up like I always do at the very end, talking about my favorite club. In the fifth tier, Atlético dos Arcos, some good and bad news last week, but the good news was a little bit better. We'll do mailbag, got some really good questions this week, and also give you an update on some of my podcast problems that one of the people asked me about, so I'll talk about that coming up at the very end of this episode. But let me just start off first that when Roberto Martinez came out with the squad selections, I said in the last episode that I thought it was going to be a mix of young and old, a bunch of veterans that have been on the team, and he was going to bring in some new faces. I was totally wrong. He basically called up the same type of squad as if he was playing Germany and England. Obviously, we saw as many as 5 players drop off because of combination of injury, and 1 player, for the greatest reason of all, left because his wife had a baby. But we saw basically a very, very strong squad selection. The only surprise was Bruma. We did not see Pote. We did not see Nuno Santos. There was some thought given to Braga's Mateus, whether or not he would get called up as one of the 3 goalkeepers. That did not happen. Basically, Roberto Martinez called up the same lineup as he probably would have called up if he was going to Europe. And that was a bit of a surprise, I have to admit. What it leads me to believe, because there's nothing else that you could think, is that it's basically a few things. Number one, it's basically Roberto Martinez saying, look, these are the 27, 28, 29 players in my head that are the team for Portugal. These are the players between the ones that I'm gonna get always picked, and then the alternates that I have thinking about on the side, that this group of 28, 29 players, this is my team. And the fact that we had 5 players drop off the squad list and he only replaced 2 of them, I think is a perfect example of why he's only got a list of 28, 29 players. Now, people say, well, why would you do that? One, even though a lot of these players are experienced players and they've been playing together for the national team for, you know, obviously during the Fernando Santos years and just now, what Roberto Martinez is trying to do is he's trying to instill his system, his ideas, his philosophy, the way he scheduled things, about when players eat, what are they eating. He's trying to instill his way into the team and try to make things different than they were before. He wants this to be his team. And he's made up his mind that he has figured out who's going to be on this team. And that's what he thinks he's going to go with. And that's what he has. I think for this upcoming Euro, which I believe next week is when they're going to be doing the draw for the Euro. I think it's only 23 players. I know for the COVID years, I think they allowed it to 25. I'm not sure if that's still 25, but I believe it's just 23 for the Euro. And these are what he has in mind. And look, it was a disappointment against Liechtenstein to only win 2-0. It was, considering the type of players. I mean, we had, look at the players that were on the pitch. Cristiano Ronaldo, Gonçalo Ramos, João Felix, João Cancelo, Bruno, Bernardo Silva, Jota, who's scoring so many goals, especially in, every time Jota scores in the Premier League, his team wins. He's been great. He played. We saw Ruben Neves. We saw Antonio Silva. We saw the new kid, Toti Gomes. And then we saw as well get the debut star, José Sá, get the start at goalkeeper. But it was just a very strong lineup. And it's hard to believe that we went to Liechtenstein and we didn't score any goals in the first half. But right away in the second half, Cristiano scores the 128th goal of his career for Portugal in 204 matches, 204 caps. And then we, of course, saw João Cancelo score his third goal in this qualifying group. That's his 10th career goal for Portugal. He then scored in the 57th minute. João Felix had an opportunity, but the goal was ruled out. And because they said that, I think Jota was offside. And as a result, Portugal only won 2-0, which to a lot of people after the very poor first half made people wonder how can you only score two goals? And that's the downside. Whereas if he had fielded a younger lineup and we won 2-0, I don't think so many people would be talking, but they are. But at the end of the day, 9 wins in 9 group matches, a plus 32 goal differential. They wrap up group play this Sunday at home back in Portugal against Iceland, who's got nothing to play for. This is not the same Iceland team from the 2016 Euro. And we'll probably see some new faces, but we'll continue to see Roberto Martinez try to instill his ideas into this team. And that's exactly what he has been doing. So not happy with the performance, happy with the result. What's the story with Iceland? I think I'll be curious to see if probably Rui Patricio is going to get the start. We'll probably see players like João Neves will get the start. We may see João Mario in the back. The kid who was called up from Porto. We'll see some changes. Porto's going to play. You'll hear this between here and Sunday. We want to be 10 for 10. We want to be the best for Portugal, the best qualifying effort. You're going to hear these things over the next few days leading up to the match on Sunday. But at the end of the day, Portugal should take care of business and win and get the 3 points on Sunday based on the talent level between Iceland and Portugal. Moving on here, because, like I said, there's so much to talk about really in this edition, and that's what happened at Futebol Clube do Porto this week at their extraordinary general assembly. And so let me explain to you what happened. Basically, they were having a meeting where they invited the sócios. Initially, it was 400 people they were expecting, or it was where they were going to have the meeting was going to be in a room with 400 people, from what I read. Eventually, obviously, it became obvious that there was going to be more than 400 people, so they decided to move it to a bigger facility, I think the arena. The arena, if I recall, is where they have basketball, roller hockey, women's volleyball, all those different types of sports. Especially the basketball team is where they play. It's a bit of a mini arena. And what happened is they were supposed to start at 9, but because they moved it, and it's amazing to me that they go from a 400 person room to a big arena. The fact that they were that versatile is actually pretty impressive. But the way I read it is they had to wait until people settled in. And then during that time, we saw, especially when people started to speak, we saw a lot of people basically that are very pro Pinto da Costa arguing with people who didn't seem very supportive at the meeting for Pinto da Costa. And that upset the people who support Pinto da Costa, whereas there are other people that are looking for a change. And there were a lot of opinions, but basically two sides. And there were words, there were scenes, chaotic scenes, not something you would expect from a big town hall. And it got out of control. They had to stop it. It was supposed to be rescheduled for Monday. And as I record this episode, the reports are that they have decided to cancel the General Assembly that was supposed to be rescheduled for Monday, they just have decided to cancel it altogether. Now, what were they going to be voting on? They were going to vote on a few things. One, moving the election, which looks like it'll be between Pinto da Costa and Andres Villas-Boas, moving it from next April, for which it is scheduled now, to June, I believe. They were going to vote on people that are SOSUs. I think for voting, you have to be a SOSU for, I think, one of the requirements is a minimum of 2 years in good standing. They talked about possibly voting for voting booths at Casas do Porto, so people can vote there, if from what I read. And they also talked about one of the things was providing support to the CLACS, the group of supporters. And those were some of the things they were going to talk about. And apparently there was just some people that didn't like what this person said. They got into arguments and it led to what seemed to be a very chaotic night. Now, let me just say the pros and cons of the situation. First off, Pinto da Costa. Pinto da Costa has been president for over 40 years at Porto. There are many people in the world that will never spend 40 years in one job. It is a very rare thing, especially in this world when people are constantly changing jobs. Analytics tells them better opportunities are elsewhere. The world has become much more globalized than it was 30, 20 years ago even. And as a result, it is quite admirable to see Pinto da Costa. And Pinto da Costa, when he took over, Porto was a good club, but they weren't as successful as the Sporting and Benfica for a number of years. And then when he took over, the Porto machine of being strong and winning championships started to happen. And he won a Champions League in the 80s, when they used to call it the European Cup. Later on, of course, he won a UEFA Cup with the special one Mourinho. The following year, they won the Champions League in Germany, beating Monaco. And then, of course, we know in 2011, they beat Braga to win the Europa League in a match that was played in Dublin. They played in Super Cups because they win the Champions League. Who could forget in the 80s when they played Peñarol of Uruguay in an absolute snowstorm in Tokyo and they won playing in the snow. I remember watching that game live on my local television, Univision, in black and white. Yeah, black and white. But that was the TV we had back then. He is somebody that has had success at Porto, but he has his detractors. There are a lot of people that feel just like people feel about Porto and just like people feel about Sporting, that they accuse of corruption. Many years ago, Pinto da Costa's girlfriend, they even did a movie out, about this. Her name was Carolina. She wrote a book called Eu Carolina. And she basically wrote about what it was like to be with Pinto da Costa, and she accused him of everything that you could possibly imagine. They eventually made a movie out of this in Portugal in 2007. I think it's called Corruption, Corrupção. And the guy who played Pinto da Costa was a very famous Portuguese actor named Nicolai Brenner, who played the part. And I actually saw it, this thing, and you know they talked about the wiretaps and... There was also controversy when RTP, right around that time, did a documentary about Pinto da Costa, and that was not very good for him. There was a TV show of comedians that did a skit, basically joking around about Pinto da Costa being corrupt, how Pinto da Costa, even in grammar school when he was a young kid, was paying off his teachers. I mean, it was something that back in the day, remember, I've been doing this for 25 years, when this happened, this was a big deal. There were a lot of angry people in Porto. Porto boycotted some of the media. And it was a big deal. It was a big, big deal. It made a lot of people angry. But Porto did continue to win. They still won championships. We saw what they did with the special one. But just like it is to this day, they have their detractors. The difference this day is that you're looking at a Porto now that has got some financial issues. It used to be Porto Benfica for many years, and now Sporting finally broke the skid a few years ago, winning a title, and they're competing on a big level. And there are a lot of people that are tired of some of the controversies at Porto. We saw what happened with some situation with Sergio Conceição on the sideline. We've seen former players, Fabio Silva's people are one of them, claiming they still haven't gotten their money. There's all this stuff going on. You can read about it. But this is also a club, Porto, that has been very competitive in Europe and has a president that has kept the club growing. You know, they built the Anta, the Dragon, obviously, like they built Luz and Alvalade. But this is somebody that is either beloved or is not a big, there's no, he doesn't have a lot of big fans elsewhere. And the media sometimes love him because he's great. He's very sarcastic. And but there's a group of people that are tired of Pinto da Costa, and they want to change. And the people that support Pinto da Costa are angry at this, that people are being selfish, that people don't appreciate what they've gotten that's been good with Porto. Whereas someone like Andres Villas-Boas, who, by the way, is getting major attention these days because of this controversy, there are people that want a fresh, and Villas-Boas wants to do this, he wants to bring a fresh perspective, a fresh look, a fresh branding. He wants to solve the money problems, and he does not want what he saw at the assembly to ever happen again because he feels it's beneath the club. So this sets up, you know, the Liga is all about what happens between the lines for Porto, but this election, and Pinto da Costa wants it in April. They apparently did cancel this general assembly. Pinto da Costa denying that he's trying to stay in power. This election is going to be very interesting, but I don't see this first election that Villas-Boas runs, I don't see him winning. I think Pinto da Costa's got too much support. But a lot of times what happens is you run in an election knowing that you're probably not going to win, but you do it for you to build your name recognition. And then that second time, when the other election comes around, you have a better stature and a better ground to stand on to compete against the incumbent or whomever else is running. And I think that's why you're seeing Villas-Boas. But when you have incidents like this, you know, and I speak to my cousins in France who are some of the biggest Porto fans I know. We're WhatsApping each other all the time. They love Pinto da Costa, but they admit they're tired of these controversies. The controversies in Dragon on the sideline, the controversies, the accusations. They're also getting a little bit of tired of this because they want to see their club as a club that my team beats your team. They don't want to see this as, I have to always defend my club because of something that doesn't look good on video. So it's an amazing situation happening in Porto off the pitch with this election. And as a result, it becomes a big story in Porto Nation. O Jogo had a big headline the other day when they were talking about canceling the rescheduled General Assembly. They were like, you know, all this noise for nothing. So they went through all this effort and now they're not even going to bother to vote on it. But the decision, at least as I'm recording this, from, you know, that this is what they expected to happen, will likely be that they will be canceling it. So it's an incredible story. No matter where you are, pro or for Porto, it's just an incredible story of what's going on in Porto, a club that I could tell you, my family being from the north, obviously, I wouldn't say it's necessarily dominated by Porto because there's a fair amount of Benfica fans in my little hometown, especially Sporting too, and Braga has grown in recent years. But there are a lot of people that are very passionate about Porto, they feel. So it's an incredible situation. I think I've told this down the middle, as balanced as I can, the pros and the cons of this situation. It's going to be a fascinating situation. I'll be curious to see what Andres Villas-Boas will do between here and April to try to build up his support, to see if he can, in fact, defeat. And if he did, it would be an upset, Pinto da Costa in the elections, which as of now are scheduled for April. Quick word on the Derby. I always say to you that one of the things that Portugal needs to do is better its TV deals, which is why they're trying to do the centralization of TV rights. And controversy aside, the way the match ended was great for television. Drama sells. It's just the way it is, people, whether you agree with it or not. I know if you're a Sporting fan, you don't want to believe that. But if you're a Benfica fan and you were at the game, there's a memory for you all time. But amazing that, and I've been talking about this all year, how many goals have been scored in stoppage time? There's been a lot of goals scored in stoppage time this year. And we saw two of them in one of the, what is always one of the biggest matches of the season, of course, is the Derby. And that was an incredible match. Just to win it, 94 and 97th. I mean, incredible. João Neves scoring another goal in the 94th minute against Sporting. Believe it or not, this is the second time he's done it. And then, of course, we saw Tengstad, the Scandinavian player, doing a fantastic job He earned the right to get some minutes after his hard work and training, according to Schmidt, and he scores a goal that puts him into, he will be a legend for at least saving Schmidt's job, because has Schmidt lost after the disappointment in the Champions League coming right after that, who wonders if at this time he would have still had a job? I think he would have. But it's the international break, and the international break is when a lot of people lose their job. But wow, what an incredible 7 minutes that probably saved Roger Schmidt's job, or at the very least, keeps him going and buys him more time. But it doesn't, unfortunately, change the disappointment with the Champions League. Moving on here, doing the Liga report. So we saw some managerial changes. First off, Philippe Martins, who managed Casapia from the second division to the first division, left, is no longer manager, of course, as you know by now. What's very interesting is that, was it like 2 weeks ago, he played to a draw in the Luge. He played to a draw against Sporting in the League Cup, the Taça of the Liga. But at the end of the day, Casapia, which generally, ever since they've been promoted, has been like top eight, they now have fallen toward the bottom, and they wanted to make a managerial change. The new manager of Casapia is a manager named Pedro Moreira. Pedro was the manager last year. I think he's the one that brought up Turiens from the third to the second division promotion. And he was managing last year. He, I believe, was let go in the fifth or sixth game of the season last year when, if I recall correctly, I think Turiens only had like 1 point. Of course, we all know they wound up finishing in the top seven at the end. But they made a managerial change, and So Pedro Moreira is going to be the new manager of Casapia. The other change we saw, not really much of a surprise for last place, and that is, of course, Daniel Ramos was basically let go. I like Daniel Ramos. I said this, and again, I always want to be honest. I always want to be objective, and you could call me out, but I'm not going to hide. I did think that a year ago that Daniel Ramos, especially the great job that he did with Santa Clara a few years ago, and he did a great job in a lot of his previous stops, Marítimo, he did a great job with Friamund, that I thought he had a trajectory to one day manage one of the big three. And I think he should have stayed. I think it was at Santa Clara instead of taking the job in the Middle East. I think he could have continued to grow his trajectory, but I realized that that might have been a hard opportunity. But he's gone, and the new manager is Daniel Souza, who managed Gil Vicente last year, took over halfway. You probably remember that Gil Vicente went something like, when he took over, 3 months without losing at home. He's a native of Barcelos, so he got the chance to manage his hometown team. But he is the new manager of Arouca, and Arouca went from finishing fifth place last season, playing in the Europa Conference League qualifiers this year, winning the first leg at home 2-1 to the team from Norway. And then, of course, we know they lost that second leg and they were eliminated. And since then, it has just been all downhill for them in the Liga, sitting literally all the way at the bottom. And this manager, when he took over Gil Vicente, were also in bad shape last year. He managed to kind of stabilize them. A lot of people are trying to do that. Daniel Souza is someone who used to work many years with Andres Villas-Boas. So he comes out of the Villas-Boas tree. Other notes to talk about. First off, by the way, let me just say there is second division football this weekend. Basically, and the reason is because I guess what was it, about a month ago, there was no second division football because that weekend was the second round of the Portuguese Cup, the Taça de Portugal, when clubs in the second division start to play. So they played it on a weekend. There was no second division football. They played cup that weekend. So this is the weekend that they make up for it. And you essentially have four matches on Saturday. You then have three matches on Sunday. The most interesting match this weekend to me, I probably would be Marítimo, who currently sits in fourth place, taking on Turiens, who's in fifth place. That's a great match. Belenenses is at home to Penafiel on Sunday. Belenenses, of course, sitting all the way near the bottom. They're having a tough time. But the other great match here is first place AVS, managed by Jorge Costa, taking on third place Nacional. So you really have two very good matches here this weekend between AVS Nacional on Sunday and Marítimo versus Turiens. And, you know, of course, my favorite club in the second division, Turiens, sitting in fifth place with 16 points, just having a great season. I'm not sure if they get promoted, if they can handle being in the first division. I might be wrong. But we'll see. And sitting at the bottom, my other favorite club because of their proximity to Arkstvalvej, with my hometown team, my parents' hometown team, Vila Verdens sitting, unfortunately, in last place with just 4 points. And Vila Verdens, they will be playing on Saturday. They'll be playing the first match on Saturday against Mafra. So we do have second division football this week. I like it when there are second division football matches. Many of these clubs don't lose any players. Maybe they lose a few players to like the under 17 or the under 18. But most of these clubs, and if they do lose some very important players, they have a right to postpone. But most of these clubs, I just like it. I don't like it when you can't play on a weekend with the national team break, when let's say they play Thursday and then they play again on Monday. Then there's no football in Portugal Saturday or Sunday. And you got these clubs that are making no money. They're not making any money to pay the players, and it's just not good for anybody. So I'm kind of, and I realize this weekend's a makeup weekend, but I really like the fact that they are doing that. And one other thing about Liga notes before I get through my second half of this episode, and that's Chaves. I was looking at a note this week. Chaves, 30 goals allowed in the first division. They're sitting in relegation zone, 17th place. They have allowed 30 goals this season. The nearest team to them is Portimonense, who has allowed 25 goals. But Portimonense has been playing pretty good lately. But going back to the first division, Chaves, wow, that is a very ugly thing. So I wanted to mention that as well. This is a long-form episode. I'll talk about my podcast editing issues toward the end of this episode. But let me just, continue on. Women's football, they are in action this weekend. No break for them. Basically, right now with women's football, Benfica's in first place with 18 points. Braga's in second with 16. Sporting sitting in third place with 13 points. This weekend, all the action is on Saturday and Sunday. Sporting is at home to Fama. They're playing the 11 a.m. match on Saturday. Braga, and this is the big match this weekend. Braga, Benfica, basically first place against second place. A result that perhaps if they draw, that would basically favor Sporting. And the typical big three, and yes, it is big three in women's football with Benfica, Braga, and Sporting. That's going to be where the competition lies with women's football. And two of the big three are going to be playing this weekend. Player Abroad report, incredible stat this week by Jota of Liverpool. Every time he has scored in a Premier League match between Wolves and Liverpool, they have never lost his clubs. It's just an amazing stat that every time he has scored, that his clubs have never lost in the Premier League. Unbelievable stat when I read that. I think it was on the Bleacher Report. Incredible stat. Another manager doing good abroad. One that tends to be in the news sometimes, not for the greatest reasons, with controversy. And that's Ricardo Sapinto, who's managing in Cyprus. His club has won 8 matches in a row. And they are doing pretty well there. So he seems to be doing very well. Since he's left Portugal, remember, he managed Moreirense. I think he went to Iran, and now he's in Cyprus, so he's been kind of bouncing around. I don't remember the other country that he was at, but when you're a manager and you want to manage outside of Portugal, especially to make more money, this is what you got to do to make your living. You got to take your family and move abroad. But Sampito is doing very well. He actually did very well with the Iranian team that he was at before them, but I think he left because of salary issues that they weren't paying him. Big Four report. Let me just start off first with Braga, Arthur Jorge. His renewal this week, he renewed until 2025. If you've ever watched videos of Braga, Arthur Jorge is emotional. He's a Braga guy through and through. And this is a very good move. If you're a Braga fan, you've got to really feel good about being only 5 points out of first place, being in fourth place in the Liga. The fact that one of your players finally got the call up in Bruma. You got to feel pretty good if you're Braga that the opportunity exists, even though you've suffered some difficult draws and some disappointing results. You have to feel pretty good that you're still in the hunt in the top half of the Liga, and that you're still in the battle for third place in your Europa group. I think that makes a lot of people very, very happy that continues to happen. And we'll see in 2 weeks when Braga plays what they can do. Moving on to Sporting, obviously their Swedish striker is getting a lot of attention, and no doubt about it, scoring a lot of goals. He's going to be their next biggest thing. Biggest news out of Sporting this week is that Genny Katamu basically has renewed, and he's going to renew until 2029. I don't think that's official when I dropped this episode. And he's going to get a release clause of $60 million. I'm not sure if Sporting and his third division club, Amora, who owns, I think, something like 75% of their rights, if they have cut a deal yet. At least I haven't heard about it as of yet. Porto, I told you about, already spoke about Porto in the General Assembly, but here I'll just basically say Conceição gave his squad 3 days off here during the international break. Usually he doesn't do that. Usually Schmidt does that. And sometimes Amorim will give his clubs 3 or 4 days. Usually Conceição will give the players off 1 or 2 days. They basically got 3 days off. You know that Pep was called up to the national team. He decided to, but unfortunately he was injured. So he returned back to Porto to kind of get him ready. Porto, again, only 3 points behind Benfica and Sporting in what is a fantastic race in the Liga Betclic. Benfica, a big story this week is that Pedro Malheiro of Boa Vista seems to be on the radar, and it looks like he might be bought for $5 million. $5 million, by the way, that Boa Vista badly need financially. But that looks like that could be happening in the January transfer window. João Neves is the talk. A lot of talk with him getting Juventus interest, United interest. Once we start getting, especially into January, these rumors are going to start to pick up. Whether or not any of these players are going to be sold, I don't know. But I'd be very curious to see if Benfica is going to make a big sale in January, considering that they've already been eliminated from the Champions League. They probably expected to make at least $60 million competing in Europe, and right now, you know, if they qualify for Europa, I'm not sure that winning Europa would even get them up to $60 million. I have to check. I might get them close, but would be curious to see if Benfica is going to make any big moves. And the other big news is David Neres underwent successful knee surgery, and he's not expected back until next year. But that was big news. Of course, he's been having some, he's had some great matches this year. He wishes he could play more. But he's had some pretty good matches. Let me wind down this episode and let me basically talk about, of course, my favorite club in Portugal in the fifth tier. First of all, let me just start off by saying very quickly, thank you for listening, whether it's for 10 minutes or whether it's for 45 minutes. I really appreciate it. If you're listening to this for the first time and you want to listen to a Portuguese expert with over 25 years of experience following Portuguese football and promoting it, giving you the news, that's it. I'm the one to follow. And you know, thank you so much for your support. Give it a follow on podcast, all the podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcast, Podcast Addict. I also put the audio up on YouTube. But by the way, also give it a like, give it a thumbs up, especially a rating on the iTunes store or Android. Really appreciate it as well. But last week, of course, my club, Atlético dos Arcos, suffered a 3-2 loss at seventh place Valenciano. I think Valenciano the week before beat, I think it was Punta Barca. So Atlético dos Arcos is still in first place. Cortina Lens, they won, but they're still in third. Punta Barca last week played 1-1 with my name, Neves FC. So because of the fact that Munson lost on Ancora Praia, Atlético dos Arcos continues in first place with a 2-point lead over Munson. Atlético dos Arcos with 25 points, Munson with 23, Cardenio Lens and Punta Barca with 22 each. This weekend, my club, Atlético dos Arcos, they will be playing at home against Ancora Praia, which just pulled off the big upset this week. Ancora Praia beating Munson second place. So this is a result that we have to be very careful with, although we're going to be playing at home. But Atlético dos Arcos taking on Ancora Praia. Interesting match between fourth place and second place with Munson playing Punta Barca. Again, a Atlético win and a Punta Barca Munson draw would be a great result for us to continue to try to build that lead, especially if we want to try to get it, because let's say Munson draws and we win, we would basically build up a 4-point lead. But either way, as long as we increase the lead, I will be very happy. And Cardinal Lens standing in third place, they're going to be playing at Corinthians. I believe that's in Viana do Castelo. And all these matches, of course, as most district matches tend to do, are going to be playing on Sunday as when they are going to be doing it. Mailbag edition. And let me start off with one of my regular followers on YouTube, Jason. He commented on this last Friday, right around the time that I put out the YouTube episode. YouTube exclusive this week. Nice. Sorry to tell you, you are going to be disappointed by the national team call-up. Bruma was the only player chosen that was different than before. Well-deserved. I'm still waiting for Betu, the striker from Everton. By the way, that's a good choice. I that would have been another player that I think he could have brought up for these two. But anyway, he says, I'm still waiting on Betu, the striker from Everton. By the way, Mateus from Braga is Brazilian. Jason, two things. First off, Mateus got his Portuguese citizenship. I think I responded to you, but let me just answer it here. From Portugal back in 2020. So yeah, he's from Brazil, but he does have Portuguese citizenship. And he has been interviewed in the Portuguese speaking press that he does want to be called up sometime to go to play for Portugal. A lot of people in Braga would like to see that, basically because Braga has been Portugal's fourth best team and they feel like he deserves a shot. But very hard to do that right now with Costa, Sá, and Patricio. It's very hard to break in. YouTube, yes. Yeah. So last week, I've had issues with this, basically with my editor in doing the podcast. And that is the reason why I couldn't do audio right away. And that's why I put up the podcast right away on YouTube. Eventually, later on in the day, I was able to upload just the audio version of without the editing in it. I uploaded it last week and I was able to get it going. And essentially, I'm not going to complain about it too much because I'm going to give it another week. But there's an issue with my editor, with the service I use. I've sent several emails. I'm just waiting for it to be fixed. So right now, I cannot break down this video, add some stuff to it like I've done in the past. I can't do that with the transitions and the jingles. Basically, I can just talk, and that's all I can do right now is upload one audio file, but I'm hoping that it will be fixed. But it will always be available on YouTube for anyone that's listening. If you prefer to listen to this on YouTube, it will always be available. But Jason, I think you know when I say this to you, thank you so much for continuing to follow the podcast on YouTube. I really appreciate it. I realize it's only audio, but I appreciate that you listen to it. I, of course, am a big fan of YouTube. Moving on to some other comments I received this week. This is from Neil in Toronto. Johnny, this past Benfica win at the Luge against Sporting has to be one of my favorite moments to date. It was so hard to sit and wait to the very last seconds of the game. I hope Benfica Nation will lay off Roger Schmidt and just let him coach the club. No replacement needed. Hopefully Benfica can continue this momentum until the end of the season. Hello, Neil. One of the biggest Benfica fans I know in lovely Toronto, Canada. I'm sure it's getting cold these days there. Yeah, I mean, if you're Benfica, your fortunes changed in 7 minutes of that stoppage time. It's just an incredible story. And I can only imagine what would have happened if Benfica had lost. And to go through that mood swing to the win is just pretty incredible. It's incredible. So I love to see passion, and definitely Neil is one of the passionate Benfica fans that I know. Got a message here as well from Twitter from Craig Burns. Let me just say this, Craig. I'm not going to be able to say everything you said because some of it I really don't want to get in trouble with the podcast people. But Portugal took the blank tonight, and it's a disgrace. Can't score 3 goals against a blank. I think everybody knows the first half was an absolute, utter disgrace. I think that, we saw a little bit of maybe what's not great about Roberto Martinez. The team looked lethargic. The team did not look motivated. If you put Beto out there, Pote out there, João Neves out there, you start maybe a Mateus, you've got practically a team that probably would have been more motivated, and perhaps we would have won by 5 or 6 goals. But I think today, first off, Cristiano saved us again, scoring at least that first goal. I think it was just lethargic. I just think the players, they just weren't motivated to play Liechtenstein. That's just my opinion. They're going to go out there, they're going to try, they're going to do all that stuff, go through the motion, but I just don't think that they were going to try. Another comment I have here is Dennis from London. John, I listen to your podcast every week. I so thoroughly enjoy it. It helps me keep up to date on what I believe is one of the best leagues in Europe. Of course, you guys have your fair share of controversies. Just wanted to say that I know that they sell a lot of players in Portugal. What do you think Portugal would be like if Portugal did not sell his players? Looking forward to your comments. and cannot wait for your next episode. Dennis, thank you so much. As I always say, it really means a lot to me when people look forward to watching this every day, listening to this every week. Well, look, there was a time in Europe, again, here we go again with my 25-year experience, I can speak to it firsthand, where you were only allowed to play on in your 11, three foreigners. I think you could have something like four or five foreigners on your team, but you were only allowed to, I think at one time, play three foreigners, especially in European competition. And then a Bosman came along, a Belgian footballer, and he changed everything when he sued, and that opened up free agency. And back in the day, Portuguese, well, let's look, Benfica and Porto did very well in the 80s. They were giants. They were up there the way Man City is up there now, the way Bayern Munich is a club now. Benfica and Porto back in the 80s, especially Porto when Pinto da Costa took over, they became big clubs in Europe. Big clubs in Europe. But what happened was is the talent was spread out throughout Europe. And definitely in that day, especially the players on those two teams kind of proved that a Portuguese team could do very well. Now, the Porto team that won in 2003 and 2004 with Mourinho, there were a lot of Portuguese players on that team. And that's an example where if you have a team dominated by domestic players, you could be successful. And there's no doubt that with Portugal, if all these years, I mean, let's just say by some strange world, some another world, another universe that exists in a 3D range, 4D range, whatever. Let's say in another world, they have football, soccer, but you're not allowed to play in any country but your own. And imagine a Cristiano Ronaldo, a Ruben Dias, all these players, Jota, Bruno Fernandes, imagine they all stayed in Portugal. The question some people have is, would these players get better because of the fact that they're not playing against the best players in training every day, like the way Ruben Dias has to go up in training with all those great players at City? But, you know, Portuguese players have a reputation for being very good young players, and then we have a reputation for having a good national team. But it's not like we have 70 or 80 good players. So I think we would have been, well, let's put it this way, we would have been higher ranked now than we are, where we're like seventh place in Europe, and this is why we've lost the Champions League spot. I think we would be higher ranked. I think teams like Benfica and Porto, Sporting, would be at least reaching the final four every few years. That I believe, if in that world where you're not allowed to play abroad, but you do play in Europe, I could see that. But by the way, it's an EU. People have a right to make money, and it's a good thing that they do play in other countries. But if you did have a world where people got to play in their own league, and the Portuguese players just played in Portugal, it would have been incredible. It would have been incredible. For Portugal. And you know what? It would have made for a great TV deal. Yeah, it would have. We'd have got a heck of a TV deal if we've got all these great players and they're playing in top levels, you know, making it far in the European competitions. It would have been great. The other question, though, is would players have been motivated if they know they can't play in England? That would have been the other thing. But yeah, it would have been a lot of fun. It would have been a lot of fun to see that. Anyway, folks, thanks for putting up for another long episode. I really hope next week or whenever that may be that I'll be able to start editing again and make this a little bit more than just hearing my voice and add some jingles. But I just want to say again, first off, if you're in the States, happy Thanksgiving next Thursday, one of my favorite holidays of the year. And let me end this podcast like I always do. Again, please follow PortugueseSoccer.com on social media. Please follow it on all the podcast platforms, especially YouTube, to show your support. Thank you so much. And let me end this by saying, as always, thank you so much for your support. Please take care of your families. And I will talk to you next week. Ciao, everybody.